All right, guys, we're back again for another week's episode of Brushing Back with Kobe White. Got Kobe still in Foxworth with us. Looks like that's where he's going to ride out for a while. Quick announcement, he and I will be in the same place at the same time next Sunday inside the studio. And we will have Brian Snow, Snowman in the Morning, the guy we were going to have last week with the technical issues. We're going to have him next week now that we've got everything straight. Kobe, how you doing this afternoon, my man?
Man, I'm doing great. It's weather's getting cool out here. Feels good. I'm glad to be home still. So,
all right. So the guest today is Preston Johnson. He is a Crystal Springs native. He was a JUCO guy. He was a private school academy guy in Kapaa County, Mississippi. Then he went to JUCO. Then he went to Mississippi State. Then he ends up in the Baltimore Orioles organization. He's going to be on in just a minute with us. But before we get started with him, I've got to get the quick reaction from Kobe White, one of the former superstars at Mississippi State University, about the John Cohen AD announcement that was made. He'll be leaving Mississippi State and going to Auburn University. Kobe, you had a chance to be around Cohen. So what do you think? Is that a good, bad, or indifferent? How do you feel about that?
Well, I mean – obviously, Cohen, he's a winner, you know, former coach, former player. He's won. He knows how to win. At the end of the day, you know, money talks, you know. So, obviously, they threw some money at him, and he ended up leaving. And he obviously left Mississippi State a good situation. You know, at the end of the day, it's Mississippi State. And, you know, they're going to figure out who to put in that position, and he will make whoever they put in there. I got full confidence that there'll be good hires. There'll be good decisions made. Even if there's no changes, you know, going forward, hopefully we don't keep losing athletic directors and coaches. And, you know, I know that's part of it. And, so if there's any booster with a lot of money and they want to give money away, give it to Mississippi State and we'll pay some coaches and keep them and ADs. And, cause that's the nature of it. And, congrats to him. You know, that speaks volumes of who he is as athletic director. You know, you got other schools reaching out wanting you to come lead their program, especially one to the caliber Auburn has been and can be and will be, hopefully still below us a little bit, you know, in rankings and stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, it's kind of a scary thing because you don't know who could come in, but at the end of the day, it's Mississippi State. You know, they're going to figure it out.
Well, I hadn't had an opportunity to kind of get on Twitter or anything, check out some of the pundits that know a little more than we do about the situation. It's a money situation. I know he got he had to have gotten exponentially more money to go to Auburn. Auburn's in a situation right now, especially in the sports arena, that really right now basketball is all they got going. Their football team is off the rails at this point. Their men's basketball is really good. Their baseball team, you know, I had high expectations for their baseball team last year, and they did well, but they probably could have done a lot better. That's a matter of fact, that's an old Mississippi State guy leading them, Butch Thompson. I can be a little bit more critical about Cohen than you can because you were a former player for him. You have deep ties to the university, and you know, while Cohen was there, you were an athlete, participated in the athletics. But I personally – nothing against John Cohen as a human being. I think he's a fantastic guy. But I'm glad to see that if he's going to go, he goes ahead and goes now. We get this change in place. You and I were kind of talking about this a little earlier in the afternoon. I truly only feel like in 7 years he's made two good hires. You know, it was an absolute disaster. The women's basketball coach that he brought in, you know, she had credentials and she should have been fantastic, but she wasn't. She was not good at all. I think he rectified that issue with the hire that he made to replace her. I think he's going to be fantastic. I also said the only two good hires I thought he made was Lamonis and also the young lady they brought in to do the softball. You know, she's an absolute legend in the sport. She has turned that program around. Mississippi State softball is spoken of highly now. And like we talked about months ago, I truly believe the reason that he was so good with those two hires is because that's something that's close to his heart. Baseball has always been close to his heart. He wanted to prove that he could get somebody in to win that national championship. He was a little selfish. I think he wanted that first national championship to be a baseball championship because they had been so close so many times. And like I said, I'm excited to see the direction the university is headed. I hope they don't drop the ball, you know, with this new AD hire. And one thing I didn't even think about, it's going to be weird. This upcoming weekend, John Cohen is going to be still on campus, but he's going to be in the visiting AD box at the football game. That's going to be really strange. So,
oh, yeah. Well, and the thing I'm thinking about is obviously there's so many variables that go into an athletic director being able to run things and do things or get things done how they had envisioned them and hoped they would be. But he's going to have a whole lot bigger pocketbook to be writing out checks for football coaches and baseball coaches. And he may go over there. I assume he's going to make some changes on the football side, but I wouldn't think he would have to from the baseball end of it. Because Butch Thompson, heck, he's went to Omaha, and it might even be easier on Butch to be able to say, hey, man, we got this much more money. We can get you this assistant coach, this one here, this one. And hopefully none of our guys get poached. So that'd be kind of a thing to be worried about. But
I said, while we're waiting on Preston, I wanted to get that your quick reaction. I knew you were going to have a really good opinion about it because you were part of the programs. I'm going to go ahead. We're going to bring in Preston Johnson at this time. There the man is, the man of the hour, Preston Johnson. Preston, how you doing today, brother?
I'm doing good. How are y'all doing?
Fantastic. We're excited to have you on here today. What we don't want to overload you with a bunch of questions and stuff, but we want to hear about the journey you've been over in the last few months. We were just hyping you up about small town guy, came from, you know, Kapaa Academy. If you put every living soul in Kapaa County, Mississippi, in one area, one room, let's say, it still wouldn't be anywhere close to where Baltimore, Maryland would be sitting. And I know being drafted by Baltimore, that had to have been the unreal experience that you knew it would be one day.
Oh, yeah, sure. It was definitely a dream come true. Like Kobe can probably tell you, it was a long process and something we dreamed about as we're, you know, growing up playing baseball. And you never really think that it's going to be a reality until, you know, it just becomes one and you're just kind of like, what am I doing here? But, you know, it's a blessing from the Lord, and, you know, I just got to live every day like it's my last. So.
Exactly. Man, speaking on kind of your journey, coming out of high school, obviously went to Hines. How all did that process come about? Were you a high-recruited junior college guy? Did you have some D1 offers and just decided junior college would be better? You know, kind of put it in perspective for kids listening to this that might would think, okay, you got to have this way to get into the big leagues or get into pro ball or Mississippi State or whatever. Kind of what was your story on that?
Yeah, so I started out, I was actually a catcher all through high school as a ninth and 10th grade year, but tore my knee up my ninth grade year, had surgery. The surgery didn't take, so I had surgery again my 10th grade year, and the doctor pretty much told me that, you know, I wouldn't be a catcher anymore. So I, you know, picked up pitching, so which it kind of worked out a little bit. But, you know, coming out of high school, I didn't receive a single D1 offer. So it was kind of, you know, disheartening. Just kind of, you know, I talked to Mississippi State a little bit. You know, I never threw hard enough. My stuff wasn't as sharp as they'd like it. And, you know, just I wasn't ready to go to D1, which was, you know, a tough thing to swallow, you know, as a kid coming out of high school, which you always want to go D1. You know, that's the dream. That's the standard, you know, that we all try to reach. So I didn't get any D1 offers. I got offered by, you know, all the JUCOs in Mississippi, and, you know, went to all the showcases and, you know, went all over the state, you know, talking to coaches and, you know, players from different schools and, you know, trying to figure out where my fit was and where I wanted to go to JUCO, you know, now that I have, you know, a few offers on the table and, you know, a few opportunities to go play ball and, you know, continue my career. And, you know, it's kind of the Lord, you know, after a lot of praying and searching and, you know, just talking and investigating, I landed on Hines, and, you know, with Sam Temple over there, and, you know, we got to go over there and meet him and all the guys. And, you know, I knew a lot of guys that, you know, had gone to Hines and, you know, and even gone, you know, past Hines to D1 schools and the D2 schools and continued their careers after Hines. It was really promising. You know, I don't know. Did you ever meet Temple, Colby?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, man. Every time we played Hines, it was a competitive series, two games. You know, if you could leave Hines, you know, if you went to Hines and played and you won one game, you'd done a whole lot, you know. So
that's right. Yeah. He was a tough man, dude. He was, you know, that's one thing that I was, you know, grateful for at Hines is, you know, he's one of the main, you know, I guess, instruments that the Lord has used in my life, you know, to really make me grow up as a man, but also as a baseball player. And that's what he really emphasized, is us growing, you know, in our faith, one, but also on the field and off the field as a man, you know, and just having that character and that competitiveness, like you were talking about, is something he definitely demanded of all of his players. So,
yeah, I get to thinking about a lot, like all the stuff he does, just not only for his guys, but, like, you know, with the, what is it, Team USA, the JUCO Team USA, he helped coach, I think, a few years. I know it was my sophomore year he helped coach it, and I saw a lot of guys. And then, like, the it ain't state games, it's something else, but a bunch of D1s come in and watch the JUCO arms, and, you know, he does a ton for a lot of – he's a really good guy. You know, he does a ton for so many, so that's awesome that you know, you got to play for him, and I enjoy playing against him, so.
He was a tough man to play for, you know, at first, especially being, you know, a 17, 18-year-old kid, you know, having that responsibility and that pressure and that, you know, strictness on you, you kind of jump into it and you're like, dang, is this really what I want to do? But you know, I think everybody that leaves there, you know, is thankful that they got that opportunity and they stuck with it. And, you know, he's changed a lot of lives right there at Hines Community College.
And what's funny to me, like a common theme behind like junior college coaches or the Coach Avalon and then Coach Temple, like you just said a minute ago, is this really what I want to do? I remember being at Pearl River both semesters in the fall, both years I was there, and was sitting there thinking, man, I don't know if I'm tough enough to do this crap. I mean, it was, you know, it was 30-something degrees outside, and we're running time miles and pushing a 2.5-ton truck with shorts on, and you know, and you're sitting here thinking, man, if we can do all this stuff, I know y'all probably done that at Hines, like a little road to Omaha or Eden or whatever. Yeah. It's like, if you can do all this stuff, you can go out there and pitch, you know, it don't matter what situation, you know.
The games were easy, man. It made you think, you know, I was kind of scared going to state, you know, just, I mean, I'll be completely honest and transparent. I was scared to death, just because. You know, you're at Hines, and like you said, JUCO is a whole different world. I mean, we worked hard, and, you know, there wasn't a day off. And we had something to do every day, whether, like you said, it was cold, rain, snow, sleet, anything. I was like, if JUCO's like this, and I don't know if I'm ready for D1, but, you know, it was a good transition.
Yeah, I mean, how hard of a jump? Like, if you were to compare your jump from high school – to junior college, as far as the level of competition, and then junior college to Mississippi State, and then Mississippi State even into your first season of pro ball, what would you rate all those? Like, okay, this was the hardest, because obviously you got to get better at every one of those levels. Which one do you think was the most difficult?
I would say the most difficult transition was actually this past year, going from being a reliever at state to being a starter, you know, just having that focus, you know, because like, you know, JUCO, you always have, you know, two or three, maybe four good guys in the lineup that are, you know, these guys are the real deal. So you got to stay focused on them. You know, and it's just kind of when you get to a D1 level, like Mississippi State, it's just kind of like the whole lineup is like that. So you just got to stay focused and, you know, just grind through the lineup. Can't take any batters off. But really, going from a reliever to a starter after my junior year at State was probably the hardest for me, just because, you know, coming in for an inning or two, maybe three on a good day as a reliever, then you got to turn around and they're wanting you to go seven, you know, and it just, you got to stay focused, which I can't really speak on the transition from college to professional, because I threw, you know, I popped my elbow on my first batter up there.
Really? So it's kind
of, I didn't really get much experience in the professional world. But it's been fun, you know, just getting to meet all the guys. And it's definitely a more relaxed workplace in the professional world. Just, you know, you get to do what you want, what your career is best for you. And it's been nice not having school, you know, just getting to focus on baseball.
Yeah. Well, speaking on your injury, do you have any clue, you know, what might have – do you think – over time, is this your first Tommy John?
Yeah, that's my first one.
First time you got any clue what it might have been?
I really don't. I mean, it's one of those things. My arm was feeling great. I mean, the whole time I was with the Orioles, you know, training, the whole plan was for us to all throw one inning at the spring training facility and then go up to the affiliate and finish the season in low A or high A. Just depending on how you progressed when you got there and how much your arm was in shape. So I just, my first inning, I just popped it. I was feeling good that day. I just threw a slider and something didn't feel right. And it was kind of like, I'm sure you know, it's just kind of like something's wrong.
Yeah. That's crazy. Would it be cool though? See, I guess I'm around the 7 month mark, 8 month mark. And I'm sure you've been, I guess you're back home now, but prior, I guess you've been rehabbing up there. But it's crazy to get back in tune with the little things in your body. Like, everything just kind of slows down. You're like, hey, I'm hurting here, or I'm sore here, or I'm tight here. And it's like, you know, you go through the course of a season, you can't focus on those little things because you're going here, you're going there, you're playing all different places, and it's nonstop, go, go, go. Now when you slow down, it's like, hey, I need to work on this. This is why this is hurting or whatever. At least for me, you know, you might have a different thing. It might have just been, heck, you go from a reliever and then you start and throwing significantly more pitches. You know, it just could be a workload thing, you know. So
I don't know what caused it. You know, the guy that did my surgery, he said there was a lot of, you know, scarring that, you know, had been happening, you know, the previous years. So it's one of those things, I guess, as you're a pitcher, I guess one of those things that just happens over time, like you said.
Yeah, exactly.
I need to bring a little shine on Preston for just a second. I met Preston, almost 3 years ago now that you've got your pro league, your pro season in. Two things I can say about Preston. Preston is one of the most faith-filled individuals I've ever met. And two, he handles adversity better than any young person that I've run into in a long time. So I'm pretty sure this injury, it's going to be one of those bumps in the road. But Preston was a guy that, like he said, he was a JUCO guy that came to Mississippi State, and he just admitted for all the listeners to hear, all the viewers to see, that he was terrified when he got to Mississippi State. Well, I sure couldn't tell it, because when he came out of the bullpen, he was an absolute dog. And then he and I talked near the end of that first season and beginning of the second season. You were supposed to be a Sunday guy. Like, they were going to try to work you into starting rotation as a Sunday guy. You went from a Sunday guy to a Friday guy in about 3 weeks' time, didn't you?
It was definitely a transition.
Because it was weird. I remember watching you pitch on a Sunday, and it seemed like less than 2 weeks later, I won't say the next time y'all came home, you were, like, pitching on Friday. I'm like, what is going on here? I knew they were losing arms, but, I mean, you were the guy that kind of held the whole pitching staff together for a long period of time.
I appreciate that. It was definitely a year, like everybody in the Mississippi State family knows, you know, whether we lost people or just couldn't put it together. But it was still an experience and a fun time. It's hard not to have fun when you're playing at Duty Noble.
Exactly. Well, and to add to that, man, you got a ring that nobody else that's ever played there has, you know, and that'll never be taken away. So,
Hey, the next time you see Clark or Palmeiro, you gonna like stick it up in their face and show it to them? You going
yeah, that's what
it looks like. You might not better do that.
But you know, thinking as a player and as a pitcher, you know, as good as that year was, when you start looking at it from a fan's point of view, you know, they always have that standard again, you know, and sometimes, I mean, you know, as well as anybody playing the game as long as you have, sometimes just baseball don't fall your way. Things don't go your way. Adversity is, people start getting hurt. You lose guys get drafted. The players that came in just hadn't figured it out yet, and it takes time, whatever it may be. And, you know, and that's what's cool about baseball. You get so many games to try to figure it out, and then you got the next year. So, but.
Hey, I got a quick question. I hate to keep harping on small town boy, because you are. I mean, well, let me back up. You're 6 foot, 3.5 inch, 240-pound grown man, but you're a small town guy, though. What was it like for a kid from Crystal Springs? Well, first of all, to get drafted, but when you actually signed your contract, was that, where did you do that? Was that in Baltimore you actually did that?
No, sir. It was the Orioles only took the first round up there to Baltimore.
All right. But
everybody else, we were at Sarasota, Florida, down at the spring training facility.
Okay.
So that's where we got to go and meet all the guys and sign our contracts and get started right away.
Yeah. Pretty crazy, huh? That whole week still a blur. Like you remember bits and pieces of it, right?
That's what. So the crazy thing about it was, you know, talking with, you know, my family and everything, was just kind of like everybody was asking me, when are you leaving? You know, because I had the, you know, speculation that I was going to get drafted and take it. You know, just because it was my senior year, I had one more year left, but it was kind of the year where you needed to go and, you know, just better opportunity. So it was, everybody was asking, you know, when you leave and when you taking off for Florida or Baltimore, wherever you're going. And I'm like, man, I really don't know. And I got drafted, and the Orioles guy texted me, and he said, can you jump on a call? And I said, yeah. And he called me, and I was like, so when are we leaving? You know, when am I going to report? And he said, we'll get you a plane ticket the next day or two. I said, oh. So it was kind of moving really fast, and I think I left 2 or 3 days after that and went down to Florida, and that was my first time actually on a plane by myself. So it was weird going through the airport and navigating all that by myself, you know, just kind of.
Yeah, terrified all over again, huh?
That's right.
Where'd you actually fly out of?
I flew out of Jackson, Mississippi.
Oh, that's a scary situation, even if you got somebody with you. So
that's wild.
Somewhere we stay.
So, Preston, Kobe doesn't want to tell you this, but your story echoes his story so much. I mean, it's, when you were telling your story, it was Kobe's story. Well, except you're like, I don't know, you're 2 or 3 inches taller than him, and you know, you probably outweighed him at that point about 50 pounds, probably. I don't know. We joke about Kobe weighing 130 pounds when he started JUCO ball, but he said he weighed more than that because he had rocks in his pocket, so he weighed about 140 when he reported. So,
well, I just wish I could throw as hard as he can.
So,
man,
you
give me that bender, I'll give you some velo if you want it. Hey, I'll take 2 or 3 off of the heater for that bender.
Preston, we love to ask the guests that come on, were you a two-sport guy? Did you play multiple sports?
I did. I played baseball and football all the way through high school. And I quit basketball after my 9th grade year because of my knee, unfortunately. Basketball was actually probably my favorite sport to play just because it was – I mean, I loved it. So it was kind of hard to give that up. You know, it was one of those things where I played it knowing that I wasn't going to be, you know, going to college for it or anything, but it was fun to play with my friends, and I kind of used it as a stay-in-shape tool for baseball. So it was something to keep me in shape during the winter before baseball got kicked out.
You enjoyed abusing them guys in the low post. I know what you did.
That's right.
Man, you know, this is a different topic, I guess, but you went to Kapai Academy, correct? So, you know, you obviously Hunter Renfro went there. You always – was he a guy that always came back around? Do you kind of know him personally, or is it kind of just a guy there? And how did that impact you want to go to Mississippi State, or did it have any impact?
So, Hunter – so where I live now and where Hunter grew up is about a mile and a half from each other. And, yeah, like you said, he did. He came along around Kapaa a lot. So I got to be around him my last 2 years of high school ball. You know, he'd come out there and throw with us and about break your hand, like you could imagine, throwing the ball so hard. So it was fun to get to know him through high school, and that's kind of where I struck up a friendship with him, which we have a pretty good friendship. He's a good dude, likes to do a lot of the same things as, you know, I do, hunting and fishing and, you know, of course, playing ball, which he's pretty good at. But
he's all right.
He played with my pitching coach at Hines at Mississippi State, named Nick Amirati. He caught for state when Renfro was there, so they were good friends. And so it was even when I got to go to Hines, he would come to Hines and practice with us and, you know, be around those guys. So I got to be around him for pretty much 4 straight years, you know, practicing and doing all that before he went to spring training. So it was pretty cool. And like you said, it's, you know, small town, and, you know, just seeing Hunter, you know, go through that, you know, go through to my dream school, Mississippi State, and, you know, have my aspirations of, you know, going there and seeing him do it and go through it, even making it to the league and, you know, doing and having the success that he has now, has really shone light on the possibility and the, you know, just the way that we can do it. And, you know, just having the dream come true, you know, just having that him set the standard in front of me and know that it's possible, you know, for a small town kid to, you know, live his dream and, you know, live it out, like you said.
So when did it hit you that, hey, I'm going to be a professional baseball player? Like, hey, I can, you know, that. Was it your like the year you got drafted at state, or did you know that in high school, or when did you kind of assume that?
Honestly, I mean, it's still unreal to me now. You know, but I think when it finally, you know, clicked with me that it might be a possibility, you know, a shot in the dark, was I think after my freshman year of college at JUCO, Coach Temple came to me and he was like, hey. You know, I got this guy, he's an agent for the MLB. He wants to, you know, meet with you and see what you think about maybe having him as your advisor and do all that. And I said, Coach, what do you mean? I'm in JUCO. And he's like, well, I mean, you have some MLB interest right now. And I'm like, really? Like, I had no idea. So it was kind of there. And even he can tell you that, you know, I still didn't ever think that I would make it. So it was kind of, I guess there that I was kind of like, this may be a possibility and I need to get my butt in gear and start working hard because, you know, it's kind of falling place.
Oh, yeah.
Awesome. Well, they did mention it pretty frequently while you were pitching in Omaha. Ever appearance you made in Omaha, somebody would mention, you know, this kid here has got the potential to make it at the next level. This kid here has got the potential to make it at the next level. So that was what was so weird is when you came back here last year, and selfishly, we talked about this after games last year at state. We were begging you to come back. We wanted you to come back, and you selfishly took an MLB offer. I don't know what you were thinking. So, you know, just saying, you know, just I don't know why you didn't come back one more year, you know. Which in the long run, it worked out because you'd have come back, you'd have popped your elbow, you'd have had to sit out the whole season, so. There's the Lord working again. So,
I'm telling you, there has been a lot of divine intervention in my career, and it's been a journey, like you said. You know, a lot of adversity, a lot of challenges that I've had to go through and over, and it's funny to look back on it now and see, you know, how the Lord has worked in my life and, you know, in my career to get me where I'm at now, where I started.
Look, I'm just glad Bianco didn't call you with an offer because me and you couldn't have been friends. That's just like Kobe. If Kobe would have signed with Ole Miss, I'd have never talked to him again.
Hey, I tell you what, this is what's crazy. Duty Noble, I can't imagine how many players it has swayed from Oxford, from Baton Rouge, from Fayetteville, you know, because you start looking around, man, there's not any close to that. Like they're not far from that. But I don't care what anybody says. There's nothing like Duty Noble. And I don't think there ever will be. You know?
I think when people think about Duty Noble, they think about, you know, the stadium and the left field lounge and how many seats it can hold. But, man, like, you know, playing in it, Duty Noble has nothing to do with the stadium. It's all about the fans, you know, and just the friendships that you make. Like, you know, I'd have never met Mr. William if it wouldn't have been for Duty Noble. And it's just –
Hey, there you go. I've never met Preston Johnson. There you go. I got a question. Y'all was talking about Duty Noble. I want to ask you a question. Your senior year in high school, how many folks are you pitching in front of at Kapai Academy?
150.
Now, come on now. Bolster the number now. Make us impressed now. You probably had 1,000, 1,500 people watching you, huh?
I think the biggest crowd we probably had, it was like the second round of playoffs, and Kapai had been there in years, and we made it, and so everybody turned out, about the whole town. I think we had like 150 people there. So it was,
come on now. I heard that when Renfro was there, it was like 1,500, 2,000 people were showing up watching the ball games.
Now, that was a different story. They were good. They had fireworks. Well,
sir, I don't know if you know it or not. But you're a bigger star as he is now. He's MLB. You're MLB. Not quite.
Just a little bit.
All right. So you leave Kapai Academy in front of 100. You pitch in JUCO. What's the largest crowd you think you ever pitched in front of?
On a regular day, we might have like 60 or 65, 70 maybe.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm talking about a big game, big game. Like PRC rolls in the town, number one in the country, and y'all playing them. What are we looking at?
I think the biggest game we had at home, of course. I don't remember, you know, looking around at, you know, Jones
right.
or whatever.
Right.
I'd probably say maybe 2,000.
Okay.
Something like that.
So then you step out on the mound at Duty Noble, and you can't breathe because there's so many people there.
So yeah, it was funny that I actually made my debut at Mississippi State the third week of the season at Trustmark Park because I got quarantined for close contact for Corona. Mm. So I didn't get to go to the trip to Texas. And then he did only pitch that weekend at Tulane because he didn't think I was, you know, in shape enough from being in quarantine. So we went to Pearl. And it kind of worked out because I had, like, all my family there, grandparents, aunts, uncles, cousins. And, you know, like you said, it's just another symbol of how the Lord works in mysterious ways. And, you know, I just kind of got to have my debut in front of all my family. And it gets me kind of choked up, you know, because the one thing that I remember is, you know, looking over at my mom and dad right after the game. And it was cool. It was cool to see them right there, that close to home. So.
Man, it's something I've been thinking about, and I'm sure you probably felt this at home. But, you know, I was thinking when I roll out of here, because I remember walking through the tunnel the first game at Mississippi State, and I looked around and I was like, am I really playing here? And I had that moment where I was like, this is the most insane thing ever. You know, you see it on TV and you can't really – and you see it from a fan's point of view. But when everybody's looking at you, it's kind of insane. But I really didn't have a nervous feeling at home. It was more of a so easy feeling because everybody's behind you. You know, it's 14,000 people, and everyone there wants you to do good for the most part. The other team might have a few hundred or whatever, but you're throwing pitches that far off the plate, and everybody's hollering, come on, Blue. Come. It was like, man, that wasn't even close to being a strike. And then you throw it again, and it's a strike, you know? And it's like, man, this is so easy. Did you ever have a moment like that at home where it was like, man, this is so easy to pitch?
Oh, it was just about every game, you know, unless you were doing, you know, terrible. But like you said, like it was just it was kind of funny because you would throw a pitch and you'd know, like, crap, I missed it. And then they would let the blue have it, you know. It's just kind of like, I almost want you to be like, tell them, be quiet. You're going to get me in trouble. You're going to get me no calls. But,
yeah.
You know, I didn't really get nervous. I remember there was only one or two games that I would get nervous, and it was only walking out. But once I stepped on the mound, it was kind of just kind of like everything disappeared, and you were just, you know, it was just playing ball again. So.
Mm-hmm. Man, I wish
it was like standing on the mound at the High Academy. It's like
standing on a little bit different than that.
Look, don't be disappointed now when you start pitching in front of these minor league crowds, you know, after being at Duty Noble. Don't get disappointed, okay?
He's going to take me back to JUCO.
You'll be at games on them backfields, man, and you'll look at the box score at the end of the game, and it'll say today's attendance, zero. There'll literally be nobody there. It won't be a single fan. You know, once you get up into like low A and all that, it's, you know, but because like us rehabbing coming back and all, we're going to have to throw on a backfield in either Sarasota, Port Charlotte, whatever. There'll be nobody there, and you're like, man, how are you going to throw hard with this?
It's going to be definitely a transition, learning how to get your adrenaline going and getting your body and arm going with nobody there. And, you know, it just kind of happened for you naturally when you're at Duty Noble with, you know, 15,000 screaming and grills going. And it's going to be different.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So, Preston, the injury, the surgery, like, what's your timeline? What are they telling you?
So right now, I think 7.5 weeks in, and I can start throwing or tossing, as Coley would know, it's going to be slow, but I can start tossing at 6 months, and then start pitching around the 11th month mark. So I don't know when I'll be in games again, but it's going to be a full year before I'm, you know, back to feeling good. And that's what they said. I don't know how my arm's going to come back, or, you know, it's all a waiting process, and, you know, see what's going to happen.
Okay. Kobe, let him know how much better your arm feels right now.
Yeah. I mean, man, I don't know if you can relate to this. Hopefully so, or maybe even not, it doesn't matter, but I always had a little something, like just subtle pain in my elbow, not a ton, but I had it for a few years. And now, after I've had surgery and I feel like I do now, it's such a relief that I know, hey, man, I'm going to be better than I, you know, because my arm feels like it did when I was 8, 9 years old again. And before, I didn't realize how hurt my arm actually was. Like, so if you had, and I'd be willing to bet, and I'm sure you went to a really good surgeon, but if you had any kind of little pain in there, you're not, you know, subconsciously thinking, okay, if I move my arm this way, this is going to hurt, or if I throw this, it's going to hurt, or I need this many throws to get hot. Like, you know, and that's what's insane to me is, you know, like we did this test. I don't even know if I'm supposed to say this or not. I don't know what breach is what, but we was doing tests where they run an ultrasound on our elbow with the rays, and they put a weight on our wrist, and I don't know what they was looking at, but every time they put that weight on my wrist and my arm would lay back, man, I'd be in tears. I was like, God almighty, that hurts. You know, and everybody else would be, you know, they would say it would hurt some too or whatever, but they done that a little bit after surgery. I guess it was probably 4 or 5 months ago, and I was waiting for it. Like, I was anticipating this is about to hurt. Laid it back, didn't feel a single thing. I was like, man, that fixed my elbow. How insane is it? Something that little, you know, you have a little bitty tear on something that small and it causes that much pain, you know. But
I always had a little bit in the tricep, but it never went down my forearm. It was always, you know, just kind of, you know, in that area here.
Mm-hmm.
You can see it. And I was just, they were just like, oh, it's just tricep, and then it would go away, you know, the day after I pitched. So I just never really, you know, paid any attention to it, you know, after a little ice, and you'll be fine. But, you know, like you said, my elbow, you know, it still aches, you know, just where it's healing and everything. But, you know, I got my full range of motion back, and it feels great. I'm ready to start throwing and see how, you know, it really feels. But, you know, like you said, the mental side of it is a big key you know, not having to worry about, oh, I got a little pain. My UCL's been a pop. You know, you hear all the time, you know, people talking to you like, hey, Tommy John's calling, you know. You're just like, kind of makes you feel good that now you're like, yeah, it's probably not going to happen again. So you can just go out there and just go rip it, you know, and see what happens.
So did you have the
kind of what you mean?
Yeah. Did you have the full reconstruction or did you have a brace? What, when, which doctor did you go to?
So I went to Meister in Texas.
Okay.
The Rangers doctor. And he did, so my ligament was almost completely torn, but he repaired as much as he could. And then they took the palmaris longus out of my elbow, or not elbow, but wrist, and then put it in there and then did the internal brace too. So it's, I guess you can call it, I got a triple thread in there. Hopefully it won't be all right.
So I have a buddy who actually, his name's Ian Leatherman. He's from Central Michigan, but he actually went to Meister too. And I guess he had the same exact thing you have where the graft and the internal brace. I guess that's kind of a newer procedure they just started doing over the past several years. But yeah, man, he's felt great, you know, and it, because, see, I started throwing at 5 months. He started throwing at 6 months. But he was doing a whole lot more movement stuff with plyos before he started throwing. So it's kind of cool to see the variations in the surgery and what, you know, which I wasn't able – I didn't even have the palmaris in my wrist. I had to get mine out of my foot. But it's crazy how they can get a tendon from wherever and put it in there. it's an insane thing, but – It'll be cool to see the end product of it for sure. So I'm looking forward to February. I'll come off the mound. So I would think in 11 months after your surgery, you should be throwing at least light bullpens, you know. So
they said the 11 to 12 mark would be when I was, you know, full speed, you know, throwing against live batters at least. And they did tell me that, you know, it's a lot of the guys that were with me right now are starting to throw at 5 months. And we asked Dr. Meister, you know, why is mine 6 and there's 5? He's just like, pretty much told us I was new to the league. You know, I wasn't in no rush. I'm not 25, so it's not really a rush to get back. He said, just take it easy and, you know, ease back into it and, you know, make sure that it's all, you know, going to be okay.
All right.
Well, Preston, when he gets all healed up, they said Kobe's going to have a little extra velo. So maybe you have a little extra velo.
I hope so.
Y'all both be hitting 100 apiece. Yeah, a little hundy.
I need to catch up with him a little bit.
Come on now.
Yeah, but Preston's got a multitude of pitches. See, Kobe just says, forget this. I ain't working on no second pitch. I'm going to just throw it by you.
Well, see, this is what was funny when I was at college. Coach Foxall, he was trying to do whatever for me to spin the ball a different way. And then every time I went in the ball game, we just kind of threw that out the window. I was just throwing fastballs, and if they started piecing me up, I got out of the ball game, you know. So, I can't tell you how many pins he would show me different grips on different stuff, and the ball would end up straight as an arrow. I'm like, I don't know. We'll just figure this out as we go, I guess. I don't know.
I went through that stage. I'm telling you, man, it was after my – the whole time I was a sophomore and junior in college, it was just trying to find something that, you know, was consistent and different than my curveball. You know, just they wanted me to have a slider, and it was just, man, it was a battle to find something that you could throw at least good or almost good every time. You know, just we finally found something, and then I changed it after my junior year, and it's just, I guess you could say it's a work in progress, like you know, so it never stops. Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, Kobe, before we let him get out of here, you got any words of wisdom since both of you guys are now MLB affiliate players?
I don't know about words of wisdom, but obviously want to thank you for coming on. I know you got a lot going on, man, and you're not home very much. So the time you get home, you get to see family and get to hunt a little bit. And so that means a lot to us for you to come on and Keep grinding it out, man. I know good things are ahead for you. Congrats on getting drafted, especially to a good organization to be in as a pitcher, you know. So, but, yeah, thank you for coming on, man. We really appreciate it.
I sure appreciate y'all having me. And,
Preston, for our viewers, they want to follow your progress. What's an easy way on social media they can follow you?
Probably Instagram is the best way. I know a lot of people message me on Facebook, and I have no idea how to work Facebook. And everybody, I see everybody at church and, you know, around at the ball fields or, you know, eating in town, and they're like, I message you on Facebook. And I'm like, I don't even use Facebook. But
look, for all the viewers, for all the viewers and the listeners, don't be offended. He won't even answer a regular text message.
I'm terrible at it. I'm terrible.
So find him on Instagram. What are you on Instagram? What's your Instagram handle?
P Johnson_8.
He almost forgot his Instagram handle. Did you say he had to think about it? Preston, brother, I can't thank you enough. Like I said, I consider you a close friend. Over the last couple of years, I've got a chance to really get to know you. You're a fantastic young man, and I see great things in your future. So thank you once again for coming on the show.
I sure appreciate y'all. Thank y'all for having me.
All right, guys. That's going to be it for today. For our audio listeners, you're going to jump to a couple of commercials. And for our YouTube viewers, next week, live again next Sunday at 5 o'clock, we're going to have Brian Snow. Snowman in the morning. He has connections to both Chicago, Illinois, and North Carolina. So Kobe and I will probably get a chance. He wants to talk a lot about baseball. World Series will still be going on, so we'll have plenty to talk to him about. Thanks again, Preston, and we will see you guys next week.